This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Nat's Hot Stove Show on 106.7 The Fan. I'm Pete Medhurst. Great to have you with us. Coming up on this program, we will hear Brian Dozier. We'll hear some pieces from his conference call earlier this week as he becomes a new Washington National. Bryce Harper met with the Phillies, but again, we continue to see no terms discussed, no dollar figures out there, and those usually tend to leak when we get closer and closer to that time, and still nothing happening right now on that front. We did see some leakage in terms of the Manny Machado situation, and usually these leaks are from the agents, and perhaps his agent leaking a lowball offer from the White Sox to tell everybody else that, hey, right now, 7 for $175 is all we got. If you got more, we will talk to you. And, you know, and obviously one affects the other here in this sweepstakes. The only legitimate big-time offer is the one that the Nationals presented already to Bryce Harper, and that was back in October when the season was over. And, again, we continue to talk about his meeting with the Phillies. Good meeting, according to many involved there. Gabe Kapler, the Phillies manager, was part of that meeting in Las Vegas with Bryce Harper. Shared some comments with Brian Kenny this week on how they got along in their discussions.
Free agent market, by the way, is not closed, of course. John Heyman put this out on Twitter. I thought it was pretty good. The word got out, Gabe. Harper and Kapler really hit it off in the Las Vegas meeting. Could be a factor in the Phillies' thinking. Easy to see that both quite intense. Were you both very intense in the meeting? How did it go?
I think we bonded over stuff like, you know, training. I think we bonded over food. He loves food, and Philadelphia has an incredible food scene, among the best in the country, if you ask me. And so, yeah, I think we just hit it off. He's an easy guy to talk to, and he certainly is especially competitive. We joked a little bit about a moment on the field in September when he was able to get an umpire to change a call. And what's happening here is Harper is going to give you a little check swing. Umpire is going to call a foul ball, and he's going to ask the umpires to get together and collectively change this call, which he was able to do. And I thought it was now I think it's kind of funny. Then I was really upset.
What were you saying?
I'm saying, like, you let Bryce change that call. And at the end of the day, it was actually a strike in the middle of the plate either way. Mm-hmm. And so I was joking with Bryce about that. And I think we both got a good laugh out of it.
So everybody had a great time. No doubt about it. It's hard not to have a good time in Las Vegas. But, and Gabe Kapler's right, there is good food in Philadelphia. I've had a lot of it through the years covering Army-Navy games in Philadelphia. But, you know, look, when it comes down to winning baseball games, there is no question the Nationals are in much better position right now to do that. And I think at least for the next couple of years, in my mind, to getting that done. And, you know, right now, unless Philadelphia just comes up with gobs of money, and that's what's going to take. I mean, you know, the Nationals put a number out there, and if the Phillies are as serious as they have let on in this offseason, and a lot of speculation was they were putting all their eggs in the Manny Machado basket, and Lord knows what's going on with that situation now. I mean, the White Sox, you know, allegedly with that number, as we talked about earlier, that are out there, and, you know, we're less than a month from spring training. Nats report to West Palm pitchers and catchers on February 13th. Team's still incomplete. Pitcher's still incomplete. You know, Dallas Keuchel. I mean, is he waiting for you know, what kind of salaries Machado and Harper get? Maybe a team that is involved with Harper and Machado wants to get Keuchel too. You know, if you're the Nats right now, you know, you're hoping Keuchel probably signs anywhere but Atlanta, in my mind. Maybe Philadelphia. Certainly they would have the wherewithal to do it. But, you know, you start to look at some of the teams that have been involved with him, and, you know, the more American League teams, the better. If you're the Nationals, as it pertains to Dallas Keuchel. The question is, you know, what is Philadelphia really going to put on the table? Because they, you know, Bob Nightingale seems, you know, full in on Harper to the Phillies, but you know, I mean, we're not even seeing any dollar figures here, and the clock is ticking. You know, Philadelphia has been braggadocious about their cash. But at some point, you got to put some money on the table. Put some money on the table, put an offer on the table, and then let's see if the Nats have a counter. I do believe, unless Philadelphia just puts some outrageous deal on the table, I do believe there will be a counter from the Nationals. I believe they will put it in Bryce's court. They'll make him another offer, and they'll make him choose. Philadelphia, Washington, maybe the White Sox eventually do want to put something on the table. Who knows? But you would think right now, the way this is going, whoever loses out between Philadelphia and Chicago on Harper is probably going to turn their attention to Machado. And as we said, you know, Bob Nightingale, who's on, obviously played some of his comments last week, he is fully vested that Harper is going to end up in Philadelphia, especially after their five-hour meeting last week in Vegas. But again, you know, put the money on the table. Let's see what happens. You know, Scott Boras will go back to Washington and say, hey, here's what Philadelphia is allegedly offering us. It'll be up to the Nationals at that point, in my mind, to make a decision. How high is too high? How? And look, it's not, I don't know if saying the dollars are irresponsible is really the case. But, you know, at some point, these owners have realized, wait a minute, we're just paying some of these guys way too much money. And we saw that last year with J.D. Martinez having to wait until February to get his deal done. And if you look at the path that this has taken between these two guys, with neither one wanting to blink, each one wanting to get the highest offer out there on the table, you know, how high will be too high for the Nationals? The fact that they had another conversation with him on December the 22nd, you know, that tells you that the Nats are not just going to let him go. You know, they're willing to go to a certain level. The question is, Philadelphia and Chicago allegedly have a ton of cash. The question is, will they put up or will they shut up as it pertains to this free agency period? Some good breakdowns this week on the internet about the Nats lineup with Harper, without him. It's going to be decent either way. Now, you have to hope, A, Adam Eaton stays healthy for the full season. No doubt about that. Brian Dozier's contract this week, 1 year, $9 million. And he talked about how physically there were some limitations last year that kept him from doing what he has normally done as a Major League Baseball player, hit for that power and hit for some a little bit more consistency. Didn't feel the ball as well last year after winning a Gold Glove the year before. So from that standpoint, you know, if Dozier is reasonably back to his 2017 form, that's a heck of a bargain at $9 million, in my mind, for the Nationals at second base with Brian Dozier. But that remains to be seen. That's something we're going to have to watch coming up in spring training. He'll talk about that when we hear some snippets from his conference call coming up in the next segment. So when you look around the division, coming up in our final segment, you'll hear Brody Van Wagenen of the Mets with Jed Lowry, their free agent signee. DJ LeMahieu signs with the Yankees. So obviously another second base. And that second base category, infielder, has really been busy here of late. That particular spot was good. They're talking about Lowry playing multiple positions, possibly for the Mets, but he will be in the lineup each and every day for the New Yorkers. That certainly appears to be the case. Now, you know, you look around the league, there was a story this week that, you know, the Phillies are trying to put together a super outfield, and part of it makes sense, trying to, you know, bring Mike Trout back east, New Jersey native, you know, big Eagles fan, we know that. And, you know, trying to pair Harper now with eventually Trout in 2 years when he becomes a free agent, or you could potentially trade for him if you wanted to. And Andrew McCutchen. Now, by that time, McCutchen's going to be 34. So I'm not sure if that's necessarily at that point the dream outfield. There could be others there in Philadelphia by that time. And if you look at the other stuff floating around with Philadelphia, you know, they're talking potentially Craig Kimbrell. They're talking potentially Dallas Keuchel. But again, every time it seems as if a team or an agent leaks a name, all I keep saying is, where's the cash? Show us the cash. And Craig Kimbrell's market has been very slow here in this offseason. He allegedly put out there that he wanted six for $100 million. that's not probably going to happen. You know, teams seemingly are not willing to go with these long, long terms, especially for a reliever, you know, at 31 years old. Obviously still very good at what he does, especially with all the issues Philadelphia had last year in its bullpen. He would be an appetizing arm out of that Philadelphia bullpen. Would certainly have to put them in a better position that they were in. But, you know, I mean, we're talking about a terrific closer, a terrific starter, and maybe the highest priced free agent guy out there. And allegedly, the Phillies keep saying that, hey, we're involved. We want to be involved with all these guys. We've got the cash. And again, as I keep saying, that's fine. You've got to finally put the cash on the table. Eventually, the season's got to start. I applaud the owners, in a way, for trying to rescue themselves from themselves. At some point, for long-term fiscal responsibility for some of these clubs, you've got to do that. The money has just gotten outrageous in Major League Baseball, which, in a way, is why you may wonder why a Kyler Murray's willing to go play football and get subjected to all the physical pounding in football, when if he's good in baseball, his second deal is going to be a humdinger. And he's going to make more money than he'll ever know what to do with if he can reach the pinnacle of baseball. Now, in many cases, people believe playing baseball is a lot harder than football. There'll be some time in the minor leagues where he wouldn't be at the professional level. He's still got a $4.66 million signing bonus right there on the table for him. So he's going to have money before he ever steps on one of those buses in the minor leagues. At 5'9 and 7'8", as Oklahoma said, he measured in socks. Is he going to have trouble with that size at the quarterback position in the National Football League? Will a team want to maneuver their offense to fit his skill set? Certainly played well at the college level for Lincoln Riley, but, you know, baseball salaries have gotten outrageous, and he'd still be able to cash in pretty well. Now, you know, I don't mind the owners coming back. Put the onus on the player. Hey, here's the best offer we've got. If you don't like it, sit out. And we know at some point the players very rarely will want to do that. We did see it in football with Le'Veon Bell this past year with the Pittsburgh Steelers. But you're telling me that if 10 for 300 or 10 for 350, 8 for 350 is the best offer that Bryce Harper has out there, you think he's going to walk away from that? I mean, if that's the best offer that he has, you think he's going to sit out and not play? He's not going to get that kind of money going to Japan and playing. It could go under, you know, go down under where Byung-Young Kim is, former reliever of the Arizona Diamondbacks, 39-year-old, still pitching down in Australia. He ain't going to get that kind of money there. So where's he going to get that money? At some point, if you're an owner, and maybe we started to see this a little bit last year, maybe you play hardball. Maybe you play hardball and put the onus on the player. Here's the best offer. Take it or leave it. In the case of the Nationals right now with their outfield depth, they might be able to put a take it or leave it deal out there, especially if what we saw Chicago offer Manny Machado is anywhere near what realistically is happening on the open market for these two players. Really, really going to be interesting to see as we go forward. Again, spring training, West Palm, February 13th, pitchers and catchers. Grant and Danny will be down there for 3 days starting February 20th. Spring training opener is February 23rd. Junkies will be there the first week in March. So if you're making your plans to be there at spring training, you want to see Grant and Danny, you want to see the Junks, that's when you're going to want to do it, when they will be live in West Palm Beach, Florida, doing shows from there, doing lots of interviews, talking to all the new players the Nationals will have. Guys like Patrick Corbin, Brian Dozier, who was very good on his conference call. I think you'll enjoy listening to him coming up in the next segment. You know, you bring Matt Adams back. Guy understands his role, been as solid in that role as anybody, in my mind, in Major League Baseball over the last couple of years. And he will stay that way back in Washington this coming season. So it's good to have him back. Teams and people really fired up about adding Patrick Corbin to that rotation with Max Scherzer and Steven Strasburg. You look at what Corbin did last year, was sensational. Anibal Sanchez, obviously longer in age, reinvented himself a little bit. How many pitchers have we seen use that cutter to lengthen their career? And he did that. Question is, can he do it again this year, pitching in the NL East as he did last year for the Atlanta Braves. So lots to discuss in the month of February. Grant and Danny there starting February 20th. The Junkies on March 3rd, 4th, and 5th down in West Palm Beach, Florida. And again, first exhibition game comes up on February the 23rd as they'll take on the team that they share a complex with, and that is the Houston Astros. Coming up, we'll hear from Brian Dozier, some snippets from his conference call this past week. So he gets a one-year, $9 million deal from the Washington Nationals. In our final segment, we'll go over all the news and notes going on around the league as well as the Mets continue to do some good things here in the offseason. Brody Van Wagenen and Jed Lowrie, their latest free agent signee. All that and more coming up. It's the Nats Hot Stove Show right here on Sports Radio 106.7 The Fan. Welcome back to the Nats Hot Stove Show. Brian Dozier, 31-year-old second baseman, signing this week. He'll turn 32 during the year as the Nats second baseman. Now, if you get the 2016 and 17 version, you are rolling. He was an all-star in 15, 13th in the MVP voting in 2016 when he had 42 home runs and had 99 runs batted in. 11th in the MVP voting in 2017. He had 34 home runs, 93 runs batted in for the Minnesota Twins. And, you know, numbers from a strikeout standpoint that you don't necessarily mind. He's never struck out more than 148 times in a season. So he's putting the ball in play. You know, he's taking some walks. And he's a guy that, you know, can hit, obviously, for power when he is healthy. So you're hoping you get the guy that, look, incrementally, he went up every year between 2012 and 2016. And then, obviously, with a few more plate appearances, 14 more plate appearances in 2017, he's a guy that hit 271, hit 34 home runs, had 93 runs batted in. And you know what? He can steal a base. He stole 21 and 14, 12 and 15, 18 in 2016, and then 16 in 2017. So he's a guy that can run a little bit as well. So you're getting a fairly solid player. You know, some of the projections have him up around 23 to 25 home runs this coming season. That would be outstanding for the Nationals at second base. Here's some snippets from his press conference this week as reporters peppered him with questions and obviously starting off about the injuries that kind of sidetracked him a little bit this past season with the Twins, then an eventual trade to the Dodgers.
That's kind of what I felt a lot last year, but at the same time, you go through injuries each and every year. You go through stuff, you find ways around it. I've always done that through my career. This one just kind of lingered a little bit longer. So. But it's all good now, 100%.
Brian, this is Todd Divas from NBC Sports Washington. You were just talking about the second base market. Did you have offers for multiple years or more money somewhere else?
Yeah, you know, I don't want to by any means go into teams and dollars and years and all that kind of stuff, but I will tell you that I did have more offers for more years and more dollars. And it is kind of reason with the decision and everything. Obviously, I've had a lot of friends come through the Nationals organization that rave about it, so it was definitely a priority and one of the top choices on my list. But you didn't really know, you know, obviously what you've done throughout your career the past 5 or 6 years, and all of a sudden a little down year playing through some stuff. So you don't really know how people respond, but they responded all right. But at the same time, I really just felt like the one-year deal with Washington is kind of the best fit for my wife and myself, and it seems like a great fit. So,
do you view this as a chance to kind of reset your market after that down year?
Yeah, and you know, we're not the ones to, you know, go with the highest bidder by any means or any of that kind of stuff. We just feel like this is the best fit in life for us, and how we can be impactful in the city of Washington and stuff like that. That's the number one thing. Resetting yourself for next year and all that kind of stuff, that all takes care of itself. And but like I said, you know, with more years and dollars out there, we felt like that this one-year deal with the Nats would be the best fit for us.
Brian, Tom Boswell from the Washington Post. Your previous 5 years were really spectacular and ranked you way up there. Is there some element of this that you want to show them or you want to show yourself that you're still that player?
Yeah, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head, to be honest with you.
going into this year, personally, you kind of have a chip on your shoulder just because of you want to make sure you prove people wrong, I guess, personally. But I felt like I've done that throughout my career. I had to do that, which is perfectly fine with me because I enjoy that. That kind of what drives a lot of the things that I do. But at the same time, getting on a winning ball club for 1 year was also a priority of mine. And because I think when you're on a winning ball club, it really does bring out a lot of good in yourself. And that's kind of a number one priority.
Yeah. Hey, Brian, it's Mark Zuckerman from Masson. Welcome. Obviously, there was a lot of attention on your offensive numbers last year, but defensively, you won a gold glove 2 years ago. What kind of difference did the knee have on you in the field last year? And when you're healthy, what kind of defensive second baseman do you believe you can be?
I don't really think it had too much of an issue. I felt great running side to side, everything, pretty much at 100% last year. You find ways around things to make certain plays and that you're probably not capable of doing, I guess, previously before. But at the same time, you find ways around it, put yourself in a position to make the best play. And I don't know about your second part of the question of what defensive player I could be. I'll let you guys decide all that. I just collect.
When the Nats talk to you about coming to D.C., I assume that they encourage you to keep being exactly the same kind of player and hitter you have been, pull hitter, home run hitter, fly ball hitter. And if that is the case, do you think it'll be nice to play in a town where on average it's 10 degrees warmer in April and September and like 6 or 7 degrees warmer the rest of the season?
Yeah, I love, I know it's kind of hard to be described, but I love playing in warm weather and just kind of ironic just because I've been in pretty much the past 6 years in the coldest city to play in Minneapolis, but I love playing in warm weather. I think it's a huge factor, especially early on in the season. Get yourself going offensively and that kind of thing. I think you kind of know what you're going to get with myself, and Mike stated that numerous times, and then I went to a lot of talks. So, and just to kind of keep doing the same thing, I even told Mike that, you're going to get some good days from me, some bad days, but you're going to get 100% every single day, whether that's really good one day or really bad. So, and that's pretty much what you're going to get from me.
You're looking at a one-year deal, a shorter deal. Like you said, you had options to go other places, maybe longer contracts. How much does the success of that team and, a team like the Nationals that have made so many other moves, how much does that factor in as well, the chance to, reset your value, as was mentioned earlier, but also be part of a club that's in that win-now mode?
Yeah, that's like I kind of stated earlier. The fact that you get a chance to play for a winning ball club that's done what they've done, especially over the last handful of years, and see them, obviously not making the playoffs and then responding and still being active in the free agent market and trying to, show fans that they're all in ready to win this year and stuff, that fuels you a little bit because I've been on some winning ball clubs and then some really bad ball clubs, and every time you win and every time you have everybody from front office down expecting to win and hoping to win and things like that, it fuels you a lot, and you feed off that, and it brings out the best in yourself, and that's exactly how it is. It helped make my decision a lot easier, I guess.
Brian, Charlie Wright from the Beat. It's great to have you back in the area. I was just wondering if you had any memories from that 2006 season you played with the Bethesda Big Train.
Yeah, that's actually, I've been getting a few emails on that about from the time I spent Bethesda. But yeah, it was phenomenal being in Bethesda, being in the Washington, Baltimore, Bethesda area. It was a great summer. Yeah, for a lot of you that listening in that don't know, after my freshman year, I played that summer baseball up in Bethesda Big Train. Met a lot of great people that I still call good friends today. It was a good time, and I'm glad to be back in the area.
Have you played in the Nats ballpark enough to know whether it suits your hitting style as much
I think the consensus around the league, if you were to ask any hitter, it's a very true park. I think Minnesota, if you're asking in comparison, I think Minnesota is probably a little deeper in the alleys, especially the right center and left center. But not so much, I guess, in center field. But they're very similar parks, very true parks. Obviously, I hit the ball in the air a lot. And I played, I know of two series and maybe another one in the Nationals Park. So, and I've always enjoyed playing there. You can see the ball really well. I think I've hit a couple of homers there. The ball travels to left, and I don't go right too much. So, when it travels, which is always a good thing.
Hitting coach here is one of the huge proponents of launch angle and hitting over shifts and getting the ball in the air and that whole idea, which is obviously, as you were just talking about, something that you do quite a bit. How much do you look at analytics in regard to what you want to do with the plate, and how much are you just kind of playing baseball and kind of hit balls out of the ballpark, basically?
Yeah, it's funny you say that. I'm a big fan of analytics, but I really do feel that analytics and, I guess, the feel for the game, kind of, they have to coincide in order for players to be good and for teams to be successful. I think I have to collaborate both of them, per se. And with the launch angle and all that kind of stuff, I kind of, when I changed my approach, I guess back in the end of 2012, going into 2013, there was no launch angle or any of that stuff. But looking back at it now, that's kind of exactly what it was. I just didn't have a name for it then. And that's recognizing your strength and doing everything you can to be really good at your strength rather than trying to tweak weaknesses and stuff. And one of those strengths was in the ball in the air to left field and left center field to left field. And then once I kind of, I guess, got that part of it, and I really enjoyed doing that. And it's going to be a fun year with the hitting coach that kind of sees the same thing, because I believe in whether your strength is getting the ball in the air, hitting the ball the other way, but really honing into your strength and running with that. And some guys' strengths aren't hitting the ball in the air, which is fine, but recognizing your strengths, which is really important.
And you mentioned that you thought this was a really good fit because for you and your wife, and obviously you mentioned winning, and the situation has a lot of appeal in that way. Is there anything kind of less baseball-related that you thought that stood out to you and thought, you know, that you found a good reason to make Washington your next stop, or anything that stood out to your wife that she said, hey, this would be a good idea if we went to Washington, D.C.?
Yeah, and he won't care if I say this, a really close friend of mine that I played with in Minnesota, Kurt Suzuki, having talks with him leading up to this. And like I said, I'm not a person that chases the most money or chases the most, you know, all that kind of stuff. You really want to feel like everything kind of happens for a reason, and you're put in certain places to work and invest in the community and stuff. And talking with Kurt, talking a few times with another close friend of mine that played with Washington, Josh Willingham, how much they raved about it, not only within the organization, as far as how they treat families, the travel, all that kind of stuff, but outside the community, how nice it is of the summers and everything, and it just seemed like a really good fit. And like I said, my wife and I, once it started coming together, we're really happy about where we're at.
Brian, your stats at turning double plays are really good, especially for this era. You don't see too many guys turn 110 double plays or more. Is that a strength of your game, or just part of who you were teamed up with in Minneapolis?
I think a little bit of both. Even though I think throughout my career I've had a different shortstop every single year, but they're all pretty good at turning the double play. I'm a guy that, especially playing up the middle, I love to know everything about who I'm turning the double play with, about just with, like, position of feet and all that kind of stuff. But your positioning on the field, your thought process, how you react to certain balls to the left versus your right, and little things within the game that you can really maximize your ability to do, whether it be a turning double play or just playing defense in general. And so
fun. That's why I'm anxious to get down there and get to work with Trey and some other guys on a lot of different things. It's always a challenge, but a good challenge.
That's new Nats second baseman Brian Dozier, as he'll be playing the second sack for Washington this year, with spring training starting February 13th for pitchers and catchers down in West Palm. It's the Nats Hot Stove Show right here on Sports Radio 106.7 The Fan. Welcome back to the Nats Hot Stove Show. Now, the division rivals. Braves been a little bit quiet. Mets have been incrementally continuing to do some things here to help their ball club, and the latest was signing Jed Lowrie to a contract, and he's the guy that's probably going to play second, short, and third for them, but his bat going to be in the lineup every day for the Metropolitans. Bernie Van Wagenen, who's really been publicly very, very confident and high on this Mets team, talking with and about his new infielder signed via free agency.
As many of you have heard over the course of this offseason, we've had some very specific agenda items that we wanted to address as we went out to build this roster. Offensively specifically, we have talked about increasing our run production. We've talked about adding depth to our lineup, creating versatility, and creating balance on both sides of the plate, particularly from the right side. Needless to say, Jed is one of those rare players that checks all of those boxes. He's even more of a rarity when it comes to decision-making, because our entire front office was on the same page in wanting to bring this player aboard. You know, from our leadership team, starting with Jeff, to Omar and Allard and Jared and Adam and Ian and David Wright and Ruben Amaro, the entire group, John Rico, the entire group from the beginning said this is the perfect player for this roster at this time.
First off, I want to thank the Wilpon family for the opportunity, Jeff, the entire Mets organization, Brody. Like you said, didn't think we'd be sitting in this position 20 years ago. I'd like to thank my wife, Mylesa, my kids back home, and the rest of my family. It's just a really cool opportunity. I'm excited to be here and to be a Met. It's been an aggressive offseason here, and I think a lot of the moves that led up to us, you know, kind of rekindling in the new year, help make this decision easier.
You know, Jed would have the ability to play second base. He would have the ability to play third base, and he would be able to play shortstop. I envision him being able to do all three on a semi-regular basis in terms of which position it is, but he's going to be in our lineup virtually every day. He's going to hit in the top of the order. His switch hitting ability, hitting in front of Cano and after Nimmo potentially as we start to configure the lineup, I think is something that's really attractive.
Lowrie last year to a 4.8 WAR, at 596 at bats. Now, it's worth noting, he has only essentially taken a full season load four times in his 11-year career. In 13 in Oakland, he played 154 games, and in 14, he went 136. He had 15 home runs in 13. Then, in 17 and 18 in Oakland, he had a full-time workload, as he had 153 games in 17. And then last year, career best year, 23 home runs, an all-star, 99 runs batted in Oakland, when what was a pretty magical season for the A's overall. And Lowrie, certainly a big part of that. But now, going to be 35 during the course of this season. And, you know, can he continue this, what you would see, an accelerated trend with higher production? Certainly a gamble for the Mets at that age. And Wagenen, of course, was his agent for CAA Sports, now represented by Excel Sports Management, since Van Wagenen is now the general manager of the New York Mets. So, I mean, obviously the agent, very familiar with the player, and in this case now the general manager, certainly very familiar with the player as well, so seems to trust him. He's had just 600 at-bats one time in his career. That came back in 2013, and he hit .290 that year for the Oakland Athletics. He's played with Boston, Houston, and Oakland in his career, and this will be his fourth ball club in his 11th season as Jed Lowrie, now a member of the New York Mets. Another infielder signing a contract this week, and this was a guy that many people thought maybe the Nats would have some interest in DJ LeMahieu, the former Colorado Rocky. And look, you know, guys like Machado and Harper wanting these mega deals, the Yankees have kind of percolated about their business, and now they add DJ LeMahieu at second base.
The Yankees were top of my list, and we've kind of gone back and forth a lot of the off season. They kept checking in, we kept checking in, and finally came to agreement, and couldn't be more excited about the decision. I was told to bring a lot of gloves. I feel pretty comfortable playing multiple positions. You know, Didi's coming back. I don't know when, but I think you got a lot of talented infielders there, and kind of just see where how it unfolds. But I'll be ready to go wherever I'm needed. You know, you look at this team on paper, and it's stacked. It's a stacked team. And going into free agency, personally, I've gotten a taste of the playoffs the last couple of years, and just how exciting that is. So, you look at this team on paper, and you can see there's a lot of optimism, a lot of talent, and hopefully, bring a championship, and obviously that's pretty exciting for me.
The Golden Gloves second baseman from last season. In fact, back-to-back Gold Gloves in 17 and 18. But his batting average has slowly started to come down. 301 in 15, 348 in 2016. And then 310 in 17 and 276 last year for the Colorado Rockies. He's now going to be entering his ninth season in baseball. And LeMahieu, not a guy that's going to crush it for power an awful lot. 15 home runs last year, only one other double-digit season, and that was in 16 when he was 15th in the MVP voting in the National League. But he's a guy certainly that has the ability and shown the ability to get on base. And you talk about a guy that'll punch the doubles out there, no doubt about that. 32 and 16, 28 and 17, 32 in 2018, handful of triples. Over the last couple of years, had 8 in the big season of 2016 for the Rockies as well. So LeMahieu now, with continue. I don't want to say games and the waiting game with Machado and company. So the Yankees just said, "Hey, we'll go get somebody else at a different position, and we'll bolster our ball club with DJ LeMahieu now a member of the New York Yankees for this coming season. He will be 30 years old and should be again." Seems to have the ability to hit in the upper 200 still for the New Yorkers. Maybe able to, with the lineup that they've got, maybe able to get better pitching, could hit over the 300 mark in New York as well. And, of course, with spring training right around the corner, and when you're looking at the different things that we get ready for in the baseball season, whether you're making your travel plans to head down to West Palm, we know many of you are getting ready for fantasy baseball drafts. And just looking at some of the projections for this coming season, as many of you get ready for your drafts this coming year, of course you got to wait for Harper and Machado to find a home, because they're going to be notable guys. Mike Trout, MLB.com's number one in their fantasy top 300, projecting this year 40 home runs, 117 runs scored, and 107 runs batted in, a 300 average and 20 stolen bases for Mike Trout. Mookie Betts for the Red Sox, the number two ranked player, with 29 home runs, 115 runs scored, 92 RBIs, projecting 26 stolen bases and an average of 302. Jose Ramirez of the Indians, the infielder, at 27 dingers, 92 runs scored, 96 runs batted in, and also 23 stolen bases. Staying with the Indians, Francisco Lindor, the shortstop, number one at that position, 31 home runs, 104 runs scored, 91 RBIs, 21 stolen bases. J.D. Martinez of the Red Sox, third highest ranked outfielder, and how about that? Third highest ranked outfielder, but he's still in the top five. 38 home runs, 99 runs scored, and 115 runs batted in, the projection this year for a guy that arguably could have been the American League MVP over Mookie Betts this past season. Nolan Arenado of the Rockies, the number two man at third base behind Ramirez. Arenado projected for 36 dingers, 95 runs scored, 107 RBIs. And then comes Manny Machado right there at number seven. They project 33 home runs, 93 runs scored, 96 runs batted in. Highest ranked national, Trey Turner, the number three guy at the shortstop position. Turner, the 12th ranked player overall, projecting for 17 home runs, 95 runs scored, and 69 RBIs for the Nationals, and 41 stolen bases. Bryce Harper, wherever he ends up, two spots back at number 14. They project him for 35 home runs, 96 runs scored, and 93 runs batted in, and a batting average of 267. Now, if you get 267 from Bryce, you would certainly take that and be a happy, happy camper headed forward with those numbers. That, of course, has been the one, you know, criticism, the inconsistency of the batting average for the slugger, who, whether he's with the Nationals, the Phillies, potentially Chicago, based on at least some of the numbers that we're seeing out there. The highest-ranked pitcher, Chris Sale of the Boston Red Sox, as Sale. In fact, let's make it Max Scherzer, excuse me. Scherzer's the highest-ranked pitcher on the board, 15 wins, 271 strikeouts, and a 3.13 ERA. Sale, the second-ranked starting pitcher, projecting 200 innings, 17 wins, 275 Ks, and a 2.76 earned run average, and they project Chris Sale for a whip under one. Jacob DeGrom right behind him, 14 wins, 253 strikeouts, a 2.93 ERA, and a 1.06 whip. That seems awfully high for Jacob DeGrom based on the past season we saw from him for the New York Mets. Aaron Judge at number 17, 37 home runs, 99 runs scored, and 94 RBIs. Trevor Story, the fourth-ranked shortstop, but in the top 18 at a loaded position. Story at 31 home runs, 83 runs, 95 runs batted in, 19 stolen bases as well. And then Ronald Acuna Jr. at number 19, seventh highest-ranked outfielder, but in the top 20. 29 home runs, 95 runs, and 81 RBIs, 25 stolen bases for the young star for the Braves and the National League Rookie of the Year. And then when you start looking down the line, Freddie Freeman in that area, Justin Verlander, Javier Baez, Anthony Rizzo, a lot of Cubs coming in all around the same area, Chris Bryant, Juan Soto of the Nationals, eight spots behind Ronald Acuna. Soto at 28 home runs, 88 runs, projected for 90 runs batted in. Now, when you start looking down the list, you know, I think they're a little low on Anthony Rendon. I think Rendon, you know, again, you're hoping that he stays healthy. And if he does, fifth-ranked third baseman at the position. They project 23 home runs, 83 runs, and 86 runs batted in for Anthony Rendon and a batting average of 287. Now, of course, this is a pretty big year for him in terms of the contract going forward as well. We'll see if the Nationals try to wrap him up or if Rendon eventually tries to get to free agency. Steven Strasburg, 14th-ranked starting pitcher, 47th overall, with 12 wins projected, 192 strikeouts, and 3.65 earned run average. Now, Strasburg, in my mind, has got to be one of the hardest pitchers to project because you cannot project health. And that's a big, big deal to me as it pertains to Steven Strasburg and your fantasy outlook with him. Patrick Corbin, another guy in the top 53, as he is at 53rd, the 15th-ranked starting pitcher. They project him for 13 wins in the Nationals rotation, 190 Ks, and an ERA of 3.43 coming up on the season. So those are some of your interesting projections coming up for the fantasy baseball season, and I know many of you will be participating in fantasy leagues and getting drafts going here pretty soon. Just thought we'd give you a brief look at that. You can take a look at the entire list of 300 by going to MLB.com and check out their fantasy baseball rankings for the 2019 baseball season. But, of course, we sit here and wait. We play the waiting game. The clock is ticking for Bryce Harper, whether it's with the Phillies, the Nationals, or whoever, as we continue to get closer to spring training. February 13th for pitchers and catchers in West Palm. Again, Grant and Danny will be down there with a trip February 20th through the 23rd, and then it'll be the Junkies down there in the first week in March. That'll do it for our show this week. As always, our thanks to Jim Jester for his hard work. As always, I'm Pete Medhurst. Thanks for joining us for this edition of the Nats Hot Stove Show right here on Sports Radio 106.7 The Fan.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.